Thank you, Jay. Okay, the next item is an information item. Again, this is Al Nedved, Assistant Director with the Division of Parks and Recreation. We'll be giving an update on the Mickelson to Mount Rushmore Connector Trail project. I was hoping to have some folks from the Forest Service kind of co-presenting with me on this today, but their schedules got tied up and we're not allowed to be here today, so it'll be just me. But. Anyway, you know, just to give a little brief history on this project, because it has been around for quite a while, and it's always good to kind of refresh everybody on kind of where we've been and where we're going. And I know I personally have been involved in this project since 2008, so it's been almost 10 years of my career I've been working on this. And but the project really originated probably a few years even before that. It was kind of a collaboration between our division, the U.S. Forest Service, Mount Rushmore National Memorial, and the Mount Rushmore Society that would get together every year at the tourism conference in Pierre, and they would talk about partnerships and opportunities. And this project came up in the early years and was committed to as being a project that they were going to commit to exploring feasibility and pursuing as a very valuable and exciting opportunity and project for the Black Hills in South Dakota. So back in 2008 is when we kind of started the formal analysis of the project. We engaged a consultant at that time, Wisson Associates out of Rapid City, to conduct a feasibility study. And that study was a very extensive look at that area in general, trying to determine what routes are feasible and whether the project itself was even feasible. It looked at both topographical considerations and private landowner issues and environmental issues and a lot of different things, just to try to take a real precursory look at the project to see if it was feasible. So that project, and I'll touch base on that a little bit later here, but that project wrapped up in 2012. With some, a couple amendments that were done to the original one that was done in 2009. So officially that feasibility stage ended in 2012, which then kind of led us into the project proposal and environmental phase of the project. So in 2013 is when the permit application was submitted by the department to the Forest Service for a special use permit to construct the trail. And then in 2014, the memorandum of understanding with the Forest Service was signed, which then paved the way for selection of a contractor to conduct the EIS that was determined was necessary for this level of project. Due to the complexity of the land uses in that area, it was determined that an EIS was necessary in lieu of an EA to do so. So that's type of process that was determined. And then formally with the environmental process, the EIS was kicked off in early 2016 with public scoping and public meetings that were held during the summer of 2016. So there was a period where comments were submitted and delivered to the Forest Service through their website and also through the public meetings. Based on those comments that were received through the public scoping process, the Forest Service determined that we should perhaps engage some of those groups that had comments specific to the Peter Norbeck Wildlife Preserve, because it's generally felt that that is the area of this project where it requires a much more sensitivity and analysis to determine what those impacts and what alternatives might exist through that. So the Forest Service requested Game Fish and Parks to engage four groups that were significant commenters on the original proposal, to engage them in a way that might produce some alternatives and options to the proposed route that we could consider in the EIS moving forward. So it was kind of a way to make sure that we didn't get too far down the environmental process without, you know, taking some time to consider some possible alternatives that may have been overlooked in the feasibility study. And then in 2017, we engaged and had meetings with those groups, and they provided a recommendation to the department, which we thus provided to the Forest Service in November of 2017. And then in early part of this year, we resumed the environmental process. And like I say, just a little bit about the feasibility study. It was completed, it did involve, quite a bit of extensive soul searching by the agencies that were involved. We wanted to make sure that we had a clear vision of this project moving forward. And, the overriding theme, going into feasibility studies, that, this was envisioned to be a very world-class trail that provided outstanding opportunities, not only to connect the Mickelson Trail with Mount Rushmore, but also just provide an outstanding experience where people can get out and learn and appreciate and educate themselves on the environment. So, and then we developed a mission for the trail as well. And then, there was many shared values that were shared by all the agencies that were involved in that process. And again, everybody, including the Forest Service, the Park Service, and the Mount Rushmore Society, as cooperating partners in the feasibility study, agreed that this was something that was should be a quality experience. It should be sensitive to the environmental conditions of that area, and then just to kind of highlight a few things, and then also was very important to for interagency cooperation as well, to make sure that we're all working together and trying to work through a lot of these issues. And like I say, we all had a heavy hand in developing that feasibility study and reviewing its contents and determinations, and that was what really kind of started the process. And again, I won't get any details, but I just want to provide kind of an image of kind of what kind of analysis went into that process. That I mean, every little trail and connecting point and area of interest was combed over, and a lot of people scoured these areas literally on foot and with our consultant and our partners to really try to narrow down what the best possible route we could put forth could be. And like I say, that each one of these little pieces of spaghetti up there were intensely analyzed for a lot of different environmental factors, topographical factors, and social factors. So it was a very extensive process. And so a little bit about the EIS that we are currently midway through right now. South Dakota was the applicant for that project, being that it involved two federal agencies that were landowners on which the trail could be located. It involved the Park Service as well, but since the majority of the trail was on National Forest Service land, the Forest Service was determined to be the lead agency. So whenever working on the EIS and communications and protocol, the Forest Service is the lead agency. You'll see Federal Highway was also listed as a cooperating agency as well, and that's largely because they have been and likely could be a potential funding source for any future development of the trail. So I want to make sure that they were included in the EIS process so that their terms of funding could be met through that process. So what does the EIS all take into account? This is just kind of a brief snapshot of all the different facets, including but not limited to a lot of things, but obviously recreation is one item, but wilderness resources, visual resources, heritage resources such as Section 106 and historic landmarks and cultural resources as part of that analysis. Sensitive species and wildlife habitat is a critical part of the EIS process, and then also water, geology, and the Norbeck Wildlife Preserve and specific vegetation. So those are just kind of a quick snapshot of what this process has to take into account to come to a decision point. And it's a For those of you that have been involved in that, it's a very extensive process and a very integrated process. And the Forest Service, as a lead agency, holds monthly meetings to go over and coordinate the activities that are going on with these. So it's very extensive. So this slide just kind of shows the route that was included in the application and proposal for the trail. It was original. It started off at Hill City and kind of follows this brown line all the way to Mount Rushmore, to the area generally in the parking area of the monument there. You'll see that there's a kind of a spur that goes through there. That's what's considered the equestrian route. The main trail, as proposed, does not go through the Black Elk Wilderness. It does avoid the Black Elk Wilderness. It does go through the Peter Norbeck Wildlife Preserve, but the main trail does not go through Black Elk. But the Park Service does not have the ability to allow horses within the memorial, so that alternate equestrian route was developed to allow horses to utilize the trail but yet get to their destination at Mount Rushmore. And that route uses existing trails within the Black Elk Wilderness, and then it eventually joins up with the Blackberry Trail, which comes out of the Black Elk and comes up to Mount Rushmore. So even though that is proposed as part of the trail, there are no improvements or reroutes or changes being proposed to that trail as it currently states today. It's kind of a status quo there as it goes through the Black Elk. Again, just to touch on public scoping a little bit. We had two public meetings, one in Hill City and one in Rapid City, in the summer of 2016. There are 64 written comments that were submitted, and those can be viewed on the RushmoreConnectorTrail.com website, which was the website that was set up for that. On there, there's a link that takes you to the Forest Service site, which is the official repository of those comments. So back to the working group in 2017. Again, the Forest Service requested the department to engage four groups. There, as you see there, the Norbeck Society, Friends of the Norbeck, the Black Hills Sportsman's Club, and the Wilderness Society, the Black Hills Chapter, to work with them and, with the help of a consultant, go through kind of a GIS exercise to hear what's really important to them and identify their critical issues. And we, as a group, identified 23 of those. And then, once we got through that, then we started the process of looking at the maps and had a kind of projection like this up on the screen and started the process of trying to identify routes and alternatives that they might feel would make the trail a little bit better, might address some of their concerns as organizations. That they might have with the proposed route, and then we would provide a recommendation to the Forest Service for some possible route alternatives that we could maybe tweak the proposed route to make sure that we analyze those changes. And because, like I say, to kind of back the train up, once you kind of gone through the analysis phase of the EIS, it's pretty hard to kind of back up and relook at something. So when we start this process of environmental analysis, we want to make sure that we have all possible alternatives and options identified before we move forward, because it's a little difficult to look back. So the working group did come up with some recommendations and some possible alternatives. As a theme, there was kind of two different themes that they identified. One was to maybe consider following existing routes a little bit more along disturbed areas or areas that are currently used for transportation routes, whether it be vehicular or non-motorized, in a way that would lessen the impact of the area from a development standpoint. It didn't necessarily reduce the amount of trail in the Norbeck Wildlife Preserve, but it did perhaps look at areas that, like I said, we could kind of piggyback on with roads or different things that would provide for a lesser impact. And then the other theme was to to strategically try to reduce the amount of miles within the Norbeck. During the feasibility study, you know, we did, you know, pay close attention to that fact, you know, the trail where it was deemed it was necessary to be proposed within the Norbeck. You know, we tried to, you know, again, look at existing roads, and the majority of that proposed route was within real close proximity to Highway 244. Kind of once you get into the Norbeck, there's your options for trails are a lot less. So it is just kind of the nature of the beast. You know, those options all kind of funnel down to that Highway 244 corridor, and I think around 75% of the trail within the Norbeck at that point was within 300 yards of the highway to that effect. But you know, we did come up with some alternatives to reduce the miles there as well. And then another recommendation that came out of the working group was to kind of take that same process and work with the Park Service on some of their concerns, and maybe try to come up with some options with the Park Service on alternatives to the route that goes through the memorial, which for the most part, the majority of the trail within the memorial is and was proposed to be a boardwalk structure. Because like I say, it all kind of funnels down to Highway 244. The topography gets extremely rough and rugged, and then you have to kind of get on the road, and that's about the only way in there. But so this map kind of shows kind of some of those alternatives. The light tan route shows the proposed route. The green route shows an option that kind of tries to reduce the amount of miles in the Norbeck, and then the blue route is a route that tries to follow some existing trails and roads in the area. The blue is the Peter Norbeck Wildlife Preserve, and then the green is the Black Elk Wilderness, and then the light green is all Forest Service property, and that's Mount Rushmore there. You know, once these options were produced, we quickly engaged the consultant to determine the feasibility of these routes. And you know, during the working group sessions, we did not get into the technical possibilities of these, and we didn't vet them extremely. But we felt that would be kind of the job of the consultant to move that to the next stage and determine if some of these options are even feasible. So, I don't mean to blind Tom here, but you know, these routes here, like that, kind of originate at the intersection of the highways there. You know, this blue route kind of follows the Needles Highway and then up Palmer Gulch Road. You know, this is, you know, even during the feasibility study, we determined this is very rough. I mean, even for Highway 87, and to try to put a trail in there, even alongside the road, would be extremely difficult and would require major work. So I think quickly, you know, these routes that originate from this area are not being considered. I mean, they'll probably be listed as considered, but not analyzed in the EIS. But as we get up here, this route that kind of comes north and joins up with the Centennial Trail, this is one that's is being looked at, is likely to be analyzed, because it does get out of the Peter Norbeck here and kind of comes around the north, joins up with the Centennial Trail, and then enters the Norbeck there, and then joins up with Big Pine trailhead there along Highway 244. That route alternative would remove about 1.6 miles out of the Norbeck Wildlife Preserve. And then, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, getting together with the Park Service and kind of doing the same process. We met with the Park Service in January, and had a kind of similar working group session where we put some things up on the board and had some discussions about alternatives. And there was some possible alternatives that were thrown out to get into Mount Rushmore. One was kind of continuing there and then coming around the north side of Mount Rushmore and then coming in there. Another one was to, you know, come down this drainage here and then come into the memorial there. It's all very rough, rugged country, but there, you know, it was identified that those might be some possibilities. Allowed the Park Service to kind of go back and discuss those options a little bit more with their staff, but they came back as could not support those options to be considered in the EIS. So those options likely will not be included in the environmental phases coming up. Just a real quick idea of what that boardwalk within Mount Rushmore would look like. It'd be like an elevated boardwalk that would be off the shoulder of the road, supported by structures like this. It'd be very similar to the structure that's in Custer State Park, right by the park office, that kind of goes around that hill there. Very similar to that. In fact, I think that picture is maybe of that structure there. So the remaining schedule. Again, we're just kind of finishing up, you know, determining the feasibility and studying the feasibility of these alternatives that were produced by the working group. Snow and weather kind of set us back a little bit for the staff to get out there and look at those. So we're a little bit behind, but I expect by next week we'll be pretty close to having the final recommendation to what would be analyzed in the EIS. Biological and heritage surveys are anticipated to be completed by July. And then a draft EIS would be available by September 21st, and that would open up a 45-day public comment period, which would conclude in November. And then the final EIS and draft record of decision, which would then allow for an objection period of 45 days, would begin in late January. And then also just of note, the Park Service has a bike authorization rule that would need to commence once a record of decision is issued, and that's a separate process specific to the Park Service, and it cannot occur concurrently with the EIS. It has to start after the EIS has been complete. So that's another step of the process. But so that's a lot. Sorry to take so much time, but it's a lot of history there, and I'd be glad to entertain any questions.
Kathy Peterson, watching the history of it as we have with you, you are making progress, so that's really good. And do you think it will get down to one path that eventually will be the one that will be the right way to go?
I think eventually, you know, it will come down to that, and you know, right now we want to make sure that we have some possible alternatives to look at there, and you know, I think from a feasibility standpoint, we'll be able to weed some of those out pretty quickly. But if there are some areas that we want to, you know, we're not sure from a feasibility standpoint that we, you know, feel that they need to go through the full analysis process that would take place this summer, you know, we will analyze potentially two routes there, but once that is done and the draft EIS is being prepared, there will likely be one route, I would believe.
Thing is flying along, isn't it? Wow. Can't believe it. When do you retire, Alan? Well, progress is being made. That's good. Gee. Do they cost share anything on this trail when we actually develop it? I mean, is it totally our baby, or?
Yeah, we haven't done a lot of
a couple years out,
you know, projecting of what the funding might come from. But you know, there are some sources of funds. You know, we have the recreational trails program that's there. But obviously this will be a joint effort as well as we look, okay, you know, for our partners and with the foundation and the Mount Rushmore Society, and you know, it'll be a group effort moving forward with any funding strategies as well.
Yeah, group decision. Okay. All right, any other questions? All right.